Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to Huagesa for our continuing series of talks on the Diamond Sutra. So we're going to resume. We went up to chapter 16 last time. We're going to resume. We did actually up to chapter 15, 16, yes. 16 is a very important chapter, just to sort of recap it. It's just very simple. Many people in Buddhism, or many people in many traditions, believe that the effect of sin or karma in Buddhism, the effect of the result of actions, the painful, the suffering result of actions, disappears over time through many years, or through many practices, or through much effort, or through much prayer. But this is a very great teaching, because this said the effect of any kind of sin or suffering disappears in 1 second. So it's a very important teaching. It's instantaneous. In one moment, sin, or in Buddhism, karma, completely disappears in one moment. So that's the teaching of this. And any kind of difficulty that you're experiencing in this life is simply the result of what you did before. Just like when you wake up in the morning and your back hurts, or you wake up and you take a few steps and you're coughing, or you have a headache. If you look, that is the result of something that happened before. Maybe you had too much coffee the last 3 days while you were working on something. Today you haven't had your cup of coffee, so you have a headache. It's not something that just appears out of nothing right now. It is the effect of something that came before, like yesterday, or 2 days ago, or 3 days ago. In the same way, this says that any kind of karma that you experience now is the result of something that happened before. It's very simple. So that's Buddhist teaching. There's just cause and effect. Cause and effect. Cause and effect. But the great part about that is this effect can disappear in one instant. It doesn't need stages, years, decades, centuries, practices. In one instant, if your thinking is completely cut off, the effect of this karma is cut off. Very interesting. So liberation happens in one moment in Buddhism. It's not an effect of time. It's in one moment. Very simple. Okay? So we're going to continue today with a new chapter, which is chapter 17. No one attains transcendental wisdom. At that time, Subhuti addressed the Buddha, saying, "World-honored one, if good men and good women seek the consummation of incomparable enlightenment, by what criteria should they abide, and how should they control their thoughts?" So actually, it's very interesting. He asked the same question in chapter 2. Subhuti asked the same question, but it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different. So Buddha already gave an answer, how you should control yourself. But Subhuti asks again, the same question again. A little bit different, but the same. Buddha replied to Subhuti, "Good men and good women seeking the consummation of incomparable enlightenment must create this resolved attitude of mind. I must liberate all living beings. Yet, when all have been liberated, not anyone is liberated. Wherefore, if a bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality, he is consequently not a bodhisattva, Subhuti. This is because in reality, there is this rise to the consummation of incomparable enlightenment." So, very interesting teaching here, this first situation. The Subhuti asks, very honestly, how do we get enlightenment? How should we lead this life? How should we control our thoughts? And the Buddha says something very interesting. He just says, you must make this vow. I must liberate all living beings. But even when I liberate all living beings, I must understand that no living being is liberated. I see some of you going, that's very interesting. You know, when you sit in this position, you can see very clearly how much this teaching makes sense to people, how much it's completely out. As people go, very interesting. But very true. This is a very true point. So, first of all, the first difference is the Buddha, in the first time Subhuti asks this in chapter, the Buddha says, the Buddha liberates, when I have caused them to be liberated, actually none of them have been liberated. Now, in this chapter, he says, the Bodhisattva, which is the same thing. The Bodhisattva liberates, but there's no liberation. Very interesting. This is why I said last week, this is a very subversive teaching. Very subversive. So, it's kind of like this. Did you ever notice when you're really sad, something really, maybe some of you, a lot of you young people here, you fall in love with somebody and you something happens and you're really in love, and when you're in love with this person, everything just, the whole universe is like happy. Everything you do is like happy. The Baskin-Robbins sign looks happy. The cars coming and going on the street look happy. You look at the poor people and you see, wow, it's kind of happy. You look at the street and the dirt on the doors and you think, well, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of artistic. It's kind of it's kind of happy. When you're happy, everything's happy. You know, when you're really happy, maybe some of you got accepted into great school or something, or you learned that you got a great job. And in that moment, right after, everything seems happy. The whole universe seems happy to you. Everything you see is like happy. Then, time passing, maybe your lover or something that you break up with, your boyfriend or your girlfriend, you get a note. Before you got a letter, when I was a young person, you would get a letter or a phone call. Now maybe some of you get muncha message. Maybe you get an SMS. I don't like you anymore. Get lost. It's very short, breakup is very simple nowadays. Get lost. Bye-bye. End of this SMS message. So then, the same things you saw yesterday, everything looks sad. Everything looks dark, dreary, depressing. Baskin-Robbins. Ooh, I hate that color pink. The dirt. Oh, everything is dirty. You see the poor. Oh, everything is poor and disgusting. So the same things you saw the day before are dirty, disgusting, impure. So what changed? Nothing changed. So your mind changes, the whole universe changes. But in fact, nothing changed in the world that you see. Do you understand this? Buddhism's fundamental teaching is everything depends upon mind alone. Everything is created by mind alone. So another way that we can express this is amazing teaching. The Buddha says, you must give rise to the thought that you liberate all beings. But, in fact, even though you liberate them, nothing is changed. Nothing is liberated. It's like this, space. When the sun rises in the sky, this space outside in the courtyard, see this space in the courtyard out there? When the sun rises, when it's rising, come here in the morning, when the sun is rising, that space looks blue. Now it's kind of yellow or white. Then when the sun sets, it becomes dark blue, maybe orange, and then black. But the space never changes. When the sun rises, space seems light. When the sun sets, space seems dark. But the space never becomes blue, yellow, white, blue, orange, or dark. Even though it's changed, it seems changed when light is in it. In fact, the space was never changed by that. It seems to our eye changed, but space has never changed. It's totally empty. So it's never changed. So same thing, Buddha says, suffering and nirvana, it's the same substance. Sin, if you want to say, sin and salvation, it's the same substance. It all depends upon mind. So it all comes back to mind. That's an amazing teaching. So no one attains, you don't get Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, you don't get enlightenment, just like the space doesn't get blue coloring. It just seems that way. So, wherefore, if a bodhisattva cherishes the idea of an ego entity, a personality, a being, or a separated individuality, he is consequently not a bodhisattva sabuddhi. This is because, in reality, there is no dharma that gives rise to consummation of incomparable enlightenment. Okay? So, there's no path, there's no one way that gives rise to enlightenment. So at that time, the Buddha was maybe worried that his students were attaching to some way, some one path, some one teaching, some one dharma, some one religion, some one philosophy that leads to enlightenment. But here he says, no, there's not one way. Just as there's not one enlightenment. If you see that, then anything is the way. Anything is enlightenment. It's like empty space. It all depends upon mind. Very simple. So, it's a very simple teaching. It's very clear. If you don't understand what this teaching means, look at space. Then you see. It's just like that. So when it's dark, look at space and say, is space really dark? When it's light, look at space and say, is space really light or bright? No. Sunlight appears, space seems light. Sunlight disappears, space seems dark. But space actually is never changed by light or dark. Sin or nirvana. Pure or impure. Very simple. Only thinking makes that. That's also, Buddha wants to liberate us from that thinking. It's very simple. Sabuti, what do you think? When the Tathagata was with Dipankara Buddha, was there any dharma for the attainment of the consummation of incomparable enlightenment? No, world-honored one. As I understand the Buddha's meaning, there was no dharma, there was no teaching by which the Tathagata attained the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. So that just means no one path. There's no one teaching. There's no one way. No one religion by which enlightenment is attained. That's true enlightenment. It's very interesting teaching. So when you see, just see. When you hear, just hear. Smell, just smell. Taste, just taste. That experience, that's not one teaching. That's not one dharma. See, all of your heads, you heard the bird, and you go, the bird goes, there's a bird in the Dharma room, come for this Dharma talk. The bird goes, and some people's heads went, Korean people, American people, French people, Canadian people, that is exactly this teaching. It's not bird, say sorry, bird sound, say sorry. Those are separate dharmas. Separate teaching, bird sound, that's English teaching. Seishori, that's Korean teaching. But that dharma, the dharma that did that, that's what this is pointing to. Very interesting. All of you just proved the teaching here. The Buddha said, you are right, Sabuti. Verily, there is no dharma by which the Tathagata attained the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. Sabuti, had there been any such dharma, any such formula, Dipankara Buddha would not have predicted concerning me, in the ages of the future you will come to be called a Buddha called Shakyamuni. But Dipankara Buddha made that prediction concerning me because there is actually no dharma, there's no one dharma, for the attainment of the consummation of incomparable enlightenment. The reason herein is that Tathagata is a signification, it's a word that says dharma. So, sori, sound, noise, singing, chirping, bird sound, Seishori, those are all different dharmas, different words, talking about when you hear that, that's better than a word, better than a teaching, better than a description. Just your mind and that sound, boom, connecting. That's all. Our world is like that. So some separate dharma, you think there's dharma in a temple, dharma in a church, dharma in a songdang, dharma in a university? That's not true dharma. That's not the only true dharma. Everything you see, everything you hear, everything you smell, everything you taste, that's not a certain dharma. But we call it dharma. Very interesting. In case anyone says that the Tathagata attained the consummation of incomparable enlightenment, I tell you truly, Subhuti, that there is no dharma by which the Buddha attained it. Very simple. So, Tathagata means thus come. Tathagata means thus come. Yore. Thus appeared. Boom. Yore. You want to see Yore Bull? Do you want to see Yore Bull? Someone went, oh, they really met Yore Bull. That experience, that moment, that's Tathagata. That's this thus come. Boom. That presentation, boom, that's this Tathagata Buddha. When your ear goes, boom, just like that, that dharma. So if you call it Tathagata Buddha, that's a mistake. But when it appears in your eye, when it appears in your ear, when it appears in your nose, when it appears in your tongue, when it appears... That's better than any speech about it. So he says, can Tathagata... Can this appearance, can this experience realize something? Can this experience realize enlightenment? Can this get enlightenment? And Subhuti goes, no, teacher, this moment cannot get anything, cannot get something. Buddha says, correct. Because is already, even the bird understood that. Very clear. You don't need to understand Buddhism. Just like that bird, just already understands Tathagata. That Bidulki already understands Yore Bull. We think there's some enlightenment to get, some special experience to have, to find somewhere in our meditation. Somewhere here, I'll get it. But it's already there. Very simple. It's amazing teaching. Incredibly subversive. Subversive of any religion, even subversive of itself. It's incredible. So, that's why he says, I tell you truly, Subhuti, there is no dharma, there's no teaching, there's no dharma by which the got dharma that made that moment realize itself. Is that difficult? If it seems difficult, we'll bring the birds in again. Maybe you'll understand it better. Subhuti, a comparison may be made with the idea of a gigantic human frame. Then Subhuti said, the world-honored one has declared that such is not a great body. A great body is just the name to it. Subhuti, it is the same concerning bodhisattvas. If a bodhisattva announces, I will liberate all living creatures, he is not rightly called a bodhisattva. Very simple. The bird didn't say, I will experience that. The bird didn't say, I will experience that sound. It just did it. Sound, and become one. That's all. That's why Buddha doesn't talk about Buddha. You know, there's 14 things that the Buddha refused to talk about. 14 subjects that the Buddha always refused to talk about. 8 of those subjects were about the origin of the universe. 8 of them. 2 of those subjects were about the origin of life. The Buddha refused to talk about this. And 4 of those subjects were about the Tathagata. When someone would say, what's the Tathagata? What's yore? What's this suchness? What is it? Buddha would say. Like that. Very interesting, okay? So, to describe it, you can't call that a dharma. Everyone, right now, just with your eyes open, just look in front of you at the floor. Pay attention. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. What can you call that experience? What can you call that? What can you say about it? You can't describe it. That's yore. That's Buddha. That's the experience of that. That's this Tathagata. It's very simple. Okay? Okay. Next chapter, 18. This Diamond Sutra is very clear. Yeah, it's not difficult. It's not simple. It's very clear, though. It's just pointing to this moment. It's amazing. It's the most subversive religious text in history. Next. All modes of mind are really only one mind, are really only mind. Subhuti, what do you think? Does the Tathagata possess the human eye? Does Buddha possess the human eye? Yes, world-honored one, he does. Well, do you think that Tathagata possesses the divine eye? Yes, world-honored one, he does. And then the Buddha asks, and do you think that Buddha possesses the prajna eye? Yes, world-honored one, he does. And do you think Tathagata possesses the eye of transcendent wisdom? Yes, world-honored one, he does. And do you think that Tathagata possesses the Buddha eye of all-knowing Buddha eye? Yes, world-honored one, he does. So, very simple. There's many kinds of eyes. This is kind of like 5 kinds of eyes, but doesn't matter. This is just about Kwansen Bosal, your perceiving nature. Your perceiving nature. So, does Buddha have a human eye? Does Buddha have a human eye? Does Buddha have a human eye? It's very interesting. If you're Christian, I know many Christian people come to these talks, you can say the same thing. Does God have a human eye? Very easy to answer that. Yeah? You see this? Good. Okay. So, God has a human eye. Buddha has a human eye. You saw that. What color is the Buddha? What color is the Buddha? Louder. What color is the Buddha? What color is the Buddha? Gold. Tired Buddhas. Everyone, very tired Buddhas. These Buddhas need lots of coffee, I think. The Buddha is gold. So, we understand that the Buddha has a human eye. Very simple. You can see gold. Next. Does he possess the divine eye? That's this, like, eye that can see form. It's very simple. This is something you get from meditation. You can see a realm of form. Not just that form, but the form of thoughts. The form of thinking. Yes, the Buddha has that. Then, does it possess the prajna eye? That's the view of emptiness. That's the view of emptiness. Yes, the Buddha can perceive emptiness. Then, does the Buddha possess the eye of transcendent wisdom? That just means knowing how to liberate other people. Knowing how to liberate other people. This is like the Bodhisattva view. Yes, a Buddha has that view. The view to liberate other people. Then finally, do you think that the Buddha possesses the Buddha eye of omniscience? That means non-duality. Bli. Not two. Not two. That's... Some people went... Yes, the Buddha also has that eye. This is a very simple. That's just the same point. It's the same point. It's the same eye. It's the same perceiving quality. It's the same ability. It's the same one. But if your mind is very clear, it's the same point. If your mind is not clear, following your karma, your thinking, your idea, what happened to you, your anger, your desire, your ignorance, your fear, your worry, your jealousy, your anxiety, then you don't see that this moment, the thing that sees that sound, that bell sound, that eye is your, that ear is your human ear, your Buddha ear. The thing that heard that coughing. That hearing, that's your human ear heard that. Also your Buddha nature. Now it's like that. So the ear that heard that, very mysterious, moment to moment to moment. Its function is very, very, very pure and clear, like a mirror. It's just like a mirror. Okay? It's not the glass. It's not the painting behind the glass. Look at a mirror sometime. Did you ever break a mirror? It's glass, but there's something behind the glass. It's not one, it's not the other. Together. That point then can reflect everything, just as it is. Very simple. Okay, so that's a very simple teaching. Then, Subhuti, what do you think concerning the sand grains of the Ganges River? Has the Buddha taught about them? Yes, world-honored one, the Tathagata has taught concerning these grains. Well, Subhuti, if there were as many Ganges rivers as the sand grains of the Ganges River, and there was a Buddha land for each sand grain in all those Ganges rivers, would those Buddha lands be many? Many indeed, world-honored one. Then the Buddha said, Subhuti, however many living beings there are in all those Buddha lands, though they have manifold modes of mind, the Buddha Tathagata understands them all. Wherefore? Because the Tathagata teaches that all these are not mind. They are merely called mind. They are merely called mind. Subhuti, it is impossible to retain past mind. It's impossible to keep past mind. It is impossible to hold on to present mind. It is impossible to grasp future mind. What does that mean? Oh, you went. That point. Oh, it seems so difficult. It's just pointing to this moment, this formless moment. This is your life. This moment. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. This moment, this experience. You call it mind or consciousness or Buddha or the Absolute or Yode or Tathagata or Christ nature if you're Christian. It doesn't matter what you call it. So, you can't hold past mind. You can't hold present mind. You can't grab future mind. It only happens like that. Like this. Like that. That's your life. Happening just like this. It's very simple. Everyone thinks there's something else. There's some other way. There's some other wisdom. There's some other experience. There's some other enlightenment. There's some other truth. There's some other God or Buddha over there, later, tomorrow, when I was a baby and pure in the past. But this is very subversive. It's just pointing to moment. This moment has no time, no space. Live there. That's your day. That's your day. That's your day. Right here, right now. This experience is your day. Some of you still look confused. Don't worry. Forget this text. Return to this moment. All this is doing is, this is just like a big stick hitting you, just saying, return to this moment. Moment mind. This moment mind. Not past, not present. This experience. The less you say about it, the better. Very simple. If you can live like that, hearing that Moktok sound, you're free. That's why this Jesus told his followers, just become as a child again. Just, it's very simple. That's your day. That's your day, Bull. That's this Buddha, thus come. Like this. Yore means like this. Very simple. I expected you all to get up dancing at that prospect, but maybe next week. Okay, chapter 19. Very simple. Chapter 19 is absolute reality is the only foundation. Absolute reality is the only foundation. Absolute reality is the only foundation. Absolute reality. Absolute reality. It's the only foundation. What's absolute reality? How can I realize absolute? Hear the Moktok sound? That's your absolute reality. And hers and his and his and hers. That means you don't live anywhere else but this moment. That's your only foundation. That's your only life. It's really simple. It's so simple, it's boring. We're going to cover about 10 chapters today because you don't need to speak about any of these. Just... it's like teaching adults to walk again. That's why Buddhism can't create a mass following. Because you can't trick people into making that any more interesting than it is. It's just the way it is. Either you get it or you don't. So, Subhuti, what do you think? If anyone filled 3,000 galaxies of worlds with the 7 treasures and gave all away in gifts of alms, would he gain great merit? Yes, indeed, world-honored one, he would gain great merit. Subhuti, if such merit was real, the Tathagata would not have declared it to be great. But because it is without a foundation, the Tathagata characterized it as great. Seems a little difficult. But if you look at this, it's not difficult. It's just about merit. It's about merit. Merit. So, the merit from doing great things, from helping people, from giving charity, from giving food to poor people, from helping sick people, the merit, the cause and effect, the benefit of that is great. It's huge. But it's empty. Still, it's empty. Still, it's empty. Why he says that? Simply because we attach to the merit that we get or don't get. We're always adding. How much did I get? How much did I get from that? How much did I get? I did good thing. How much good thing did I get back? How much? How much did I get in my bank account? In my spiritual bank account? How much merit did I get? How much benefit? I should feel better. I did all this practice. I did these good things. I should feel better. But this is saying it's empty. Empty doesn't mean gone. It just says it's empty. But because it's empty, it's great. Because it's empty, it is great. That's why it's great. Because if it was a form, it was 1 pound or 2 pounds, you got 2 pounds of merit. You got 20 pounds of merit. You did a good thing, you helped someone, you got 100 pounds of merit. If it had a form, the merit you get, yeah, for giving a donation, which I'm sure after this talk many people will give us donations because we're very poor. If it had a form, a weight, a color, if real merit had a form, you would always be measuring it. Oh, well, he said it's 100 pounds, but last week I gave, this week I gave 10,000, I gave 100,000 won, shimman won, and I got 100 pounds of merit. But last week I gave bengman won, but I only got 50 pounds of merit. Why is that different? That's not the way to think of merit. It's empty, so it's great. You cannot tell how great it is. So it's great. Therefore, you cannot conceive of it. You cannot think of it. It has no beginning. It has no end. It is great because it's empty. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, it cannot be limited by time and space. That's wonderful. It's wonderful. That's all. Merit is empty. Therefore, it is great. Why? Because it's not limited by time and space. Anything good you get, it's limited by time and space. It changes, it appears, it disappears. It comes, it goes. It's big, it's small. It's new, it's old. But true merit is not limited by time and space. True merit. Therefore, it's great. Get it? If you don't get it, just return to the sound of the Mok Talk. That's the best merit.